asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Far-right candidate Jair Bolsonaro has won the first round of Brazil's presidential election. He fell just short of the required 50% to win outright, so will face left-winger Fernando Haddad on the 28th of October. Mr. Bolsonaro has promised a hard-line approach on law and order, but he's faced criticism for misogynistic and homophobic comments on the campaign trail. A United Nations panel on climate change says time is running out to address global warming before the world is at serious risk. According to the panel's latest report, unprecedented steps are now needed to bring the situation under control. Bruce Harrison reports from our Seoul bureau.
The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change released the report Monday in Incheon, South Korea. Scientists from around the world gathered in the port city west of Seoul to share their grim outlook. The report says the world has just over a decade to take measures to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrialization levels. If that goal isn't met, the panel says, there could be more extreme weather, including heat waves, drought, and rainfall. Species extinction, they say, would be higher, and more people would face water shortages. The report says there needs to be a major transformation to society at every level to prevent greater risk. That includes massive cuts to carbon emissions that countries are failing to enforce. I'm Bruce Harrison in Seoul.
A court in Madrid has not convicted a former doctor for stealing babies from mothers and handing them to infertile couples. The court ruled 85-year-old Eduardo Vela had committed the crimes, but that too much time had elapsed for a conviction. He was the first person to go on trial over thousands of suspected illegal adoptions during and then after the dictatorship of General Franco in Spain. The Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe is backing Britain's ability to retain its global strength after it leaves the European Union bloc. Prime Minister Abe says the UK will be welcome to join the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Deal, or TPP, after Brexit. The TPP is a trade agreement signed between 11 countries, including Japan. UK correspondent Natalie Powell reports.
In a move that will be welcomed by Brexiteers, Japan's Prime Minister has suggested that the UK would retain its global strength, even after its membership of the EU bloc comes to an end in March, known as Brexit. He did, however, say that the prospect of a no-deal Brexit was a troubling one and urged both sides to come to an agreement. Prime Minister Abe also suggested that the UK could join the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal, which aims to deepen economic ties between its 11 members by cutting tariffs and encouraging trade. But the UK would only be able to do so if it leaves the EU's customs union and is therefore able to set its own tariffs. It's an important sign of encouragement, though, for post-Brexit British business, with Japan a major investor in the UK.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thanks, Ollie. It's a windy old Manchester this evening. It's Monday, the 8th of October, 2018. My name is Richie Allen. Hope you're well, hope you've had a good weekend and you're in fine form. Fine Fettle, got two terrific guests for you this Monday. Let's do the Richie Allen Show.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Yes, and tweet Richie Allen Show now. Drop me a tweet, why don't you? Why don't you drop me a tweet, eh? It'll be good to hear from you.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, the Irish journalist Gemma O'Doherty joins the program this hour. Terrific journalist. She's been holding power to account for years in the Republic of Ireland and has been asking questions and going places where most journalists fear to go. Gemma O'Doherty joins the programme. Recently tried to secure a nomination to run for the presidency of my country. That didn't quite work out, but she did very well. We're going to talk to Gemma this hour. And in the second hour of the programme, you probably heard Ollie Barrett there on the news talking all about climate change and how we are only seconds from disaster. We'll talk to Piers Corbyn about that. He's a meteorologist. Is Piers a scientist? He doesn't agree And in light of the amount of academics that were wheeled out today to support the official narrative, and there was a complete absence on the BBC or Sky of any sceptics, I thought that we'd get Piers Corbyn back to the programme. And Piers will be on with me in the second hour. And one or two of you asked me to put questions to Piers about chemtrails and all that. I've done it all before with Piers Corbyn. I've asked him all these questions before, and he's answered them very candidly. Listen back to the interviews that I've done with Piers. They're all on Podomatic.com. They used to be on YouTube, but of course that old account was deleted. But they're on Podomatic.com. Just put Richie Allen, Podomatic, Piers Corbyn, yeah. And you'll get those conversations. So then, there's only one story, and I'm not going to dwell too much on it now, because we will get into it with Piers. And I'm going to do my level best to keep my big nose out of it, to keep my opinion out of it, because I'm going to try and be the devil's advocate with Piers in the second hour. What I'm going to do, in the absence of Greenpeace or Friends of the Earth, I will put their points to him. I'm not going to pretend that I agree with Greenpeace or with Friends of the Earth. I don't. I'm very sympathetic to the points of view expressed by Piers Corbyn historically. But these people will not debate. They just won't debate. What can you do? Anyway, Kay Burley, what's going on, Kay?
A landmark report by the UN says governments need to take urgent and unprecedented action to stop global temperatures rising by more than 1.5 degrees. The report says that, at the current rate, the world could pass that mark as early as 2030 or 2052 by the latest. Lorna Shattuck reports.
It's been a year of weather extremes, from wildfires in California to flooding in China. Closer to home, we shivered through the beast from the east, then sweated through a summer heatwave. Now the UN says it's only going to get worse unless we manage to limit global temperature rises to below 1.5 degrees Celsius.
Limiting warming to 1.5 degrees is not impossible, but will require unprecedented transitions in all aspects of society. There are clear benefits to keep warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius compared to 2 degrees or higher.
These are just one thing we'd lose if average temperatures go above 1.5 degrees, says the report, but there are many more consequences. Mountains would lose their glaciers and rivers vanish, leaving the Indian subcontinent fighting for survival. A single degree temperature increase could get rid of fresh water for a third of the planet within 85 years. Mountainous regions are at greater risk of landslides as the permafrost, which held them together for thousands of years, melts away. And low-lying countries like the Maldives would get submerged as sea levels rise. Countries already hit by hurricanes, meanwhile, face ever greater storms. Some of this is already happening. But if we almost halve emissions in the next 12 years and use much more renewable energy, the UN says we can still just about change course.
The message is over to governments at this stage. We've told you the scientific facts, the evidence, the costs. It is up to the governments now to decide what to do with it.
Up to the governments, say the United Nations. Scientists have described the concept of a hothouse Earth. That's what they've been saying today. And they've rolled out these researchers who say that the global warming will have severe consequences for the planet. You heard it there. They've used terms today like boiling hot climates and towering seas in years to come if temperatures rise by 2 degrees Celsius. I'm struggling very hard here not to say anything. I'll keep my opinions to myself for now. They say that some of the planet's natural forces that protect us could become our enemies. They even had a woman called Sarah Cornell on the BBC today. She's an environmental scientist. And this is very interesting because we're going to hear in a minute from an environmental scientist, a different one, a woman called Angela Terry. So we're going to hear from Angela Terry. This is Sarah Cornell, an environmental scientist. What does that mean exactly? An environmental scientist. Anyway, she's said today that chocolate might be under threat, cocoa, the Arctic could melt, and that in the future, entire nations might have to move. Wow. Unpredictable rain too, they're saying. All of this to come if the warming goes above 2 degrees Celsius from here. Now, Claire Perry is a Minister for Energy and Clean Growth in the government. This is Claire Perry speaking to Sky News today.
We've cut emissions so fast and far in the UK. The last time we were putting this much carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, Queen Victoria was on the throne. So we are making good progress, but it can seem, you know, very big and very scary. And I think it's the job of governments and the job of us working together to actually break it down into a series of steps. Government can't just do it alone. So, of course, we can set policies and regulations, which we already do. And, you know, one of the things we've done in the UK is we won't be burning any more coal to produce power by 2025. And actually, one of the conclusions of today's reports was that we should all stop burning coal. And so we were able to set up an international alliance to promote that. But so much of what has to happen happens with companies. It happens at the city level, and it happens with people changing, making different choices. So whilst the Paris Agreement is absolutely the right framework, we all need to get on at a national level.
Claire Perry, energy and was it clean energy? Energy and clean growth, yeah, minister in the government. Now, I mentioned Angela Terry, an environmental scientist. Again, I don't know what that means, but she was one that was presented to viewers of the BBC Today and Sky and many others. There's many of these people brought into studios today to say that we're absolutely screwed if we don't stop burning coal, if we don't start to get our act together, and if we don't realise that as human beings, as individuals, we're going to have to change what we do. So Angela Terry then, listen to Kay Burley introduce Angela Perry. Listen to the drama. It's, it's almost cinematic, listen.
Well, Angela Terry is an environmental scientist and founder of the One Home campaign. Joins us now, as you can see. Hi, Angela. Thanks for joining us on the programme this afternoon. How much trouble are we in?
How much trouble are we in? None of the journalists today on television were tempted to ask one of these so-called experts, is it really as bad as that? How do we know? Not even that very simple, very benign question. You'd be tempted, wouldn't you? It's a benign question. If you're Kay Burley, Angela, welcome to the studio. How do we know it's as bad as all this, Angela? How do we know they're right? They're still speaking in possibles and hypotheticals and all the rest of it. No, Kay says, how bad is it? How bad is it, Angela?
Quite a lot.
Oh, it's quite a lot. How much trouble are we in? She said, it's quite a lot.
I mean, this really is crisis point. We've been talking about greenhouse gas emissions, reducing them for 30 years. They're still going up. Last year, they went up 1.4% from the energy sector alone. So the impacts that we're seeing in the UK and all around the world, so it's the extreme weather events, the hurricanes, the floods, the drought, as well as the gradual increase in temperatures, that is getting steadily worse. And the impacts are things like the coral reef is dying out. It's harder to grow food and water shortages are becoming a real issue.
Yeah, what did Kay say?
Something that we have to do as a planet. And it's not happening.
It's not happening.
She didn't challenge any of that. How do you know that? Who told you that? How do you know it's accurate? Based on what instrumentation, what readings? No, just something we need to do together as a planet. And it gives Angela Terry then a lovely space. It opens the door for her to say whatever she wants to say.
And it is the biggest challenge we face. It's bigger than Brexit. It's bigger than any economic or political crisis. And
bigger than Brexit.
In the world at the moment. It is the biggest challenge. And it's not getting the attention, the resources, the legislation, the support. It's just sort of being allowed to carry on. And so the report that came out today is a real wake-up call. It's basically saying, the more carbon we put into the atmosphere, the worse these impacts will go. So the report goes into quite a lot of detail about what the difference between half a degree will make. And the message is very clear. The quicker we cut emissions, the better for everyone.
The quicker we cut emissions and the better for everyone. Nothing, again, was... There was no digging into this by the journalist, by the so-called journalist, the presenter. No attempt to kind of separate, the hyperbole the hypotheticals from actual stone cold facts. What are the facts? And it got worse from here.
You can't engineer your way out of this problem. It really is a case of stopping the emissions at source, which means getting rid of fossil fuels, putting everyone into electric cars, using renewables, and making sure everything is energy efficient as possible. So well-insulated homes and efficient businesses and that sort of thing.
So it's not too late, but it nearly is.
Exactly.
Wow. I know I've said it 1,000 times. It's become a bit of a cliche. That is what passes for journalism on British television in 2018. Again, much of what the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change is putting out is demonstrably untrue. And it's easy. Again, I did promise I wouldn't say anything. It's difficult. In light of the mendacity here, it's difficult to keep my mouth shut, but I'm going to do it now. I'm going to shut up. And we'll leave it till Piers Corbyn joins us a bit later on. Now, Piers did get an invitation to speak to LBC Radio today, but by the time I heard about that, I had missed it. I couldn't hear it. I'm wondering how he got on, whether he was given some respect and some courtesy, and whether he was given a bit of time to explain why he has reached the conclusions he has reached. I'm sure they weren't too bad. I bash LBC quite a bit as well, but hopefully they weren't too bad. So we'll do that with Piers shortly. In the meantime, though, we'll take a very quick break because I'm cutting short the monologue. I want to get some time with Gemma O'Doherty, great Irish journalist, and speaking the irony, well, not so much the irony, but the contrast of Kay Burley, the ineptitude, not able to ask a question, just parroting the narrative. Gemma O'Doherty has done as much as any other Irish journalist in recent memory to challenge the status quo and to hold authority to account for what authority does. Great lady, and she'll join me in a couple of minutes' time. In the meantime, you can continue to tweet me. I'll be glad to hear from you this Monday. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Couldn't be simpler, at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. I'll be back with you very soon.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever. Forever.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
All righty then. It's Monday's programme. I've got a good week of shows for you lined up this week. And you don't want to miss them. I'm telling you, this is the Richie Allen Show live on Fab Radio 2. Tune in radio, richieallen.co.uk and triggerwarning.tv.
You oh, get into my car.
Keep the tweets coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show. You might have something to say to Gemma O'Doherty. Tweet me now.
Shining on you, hey, sitting in love, stepping your
right, Billy Ocean on the Richie Allen Show, 20 minutes past the hour. I think autumn has fallen upon us. It's very autumnal out there today. Now, I know there's a huge amount of interest in Gemma coming on the programme. We'll get through as much as we can between now and the top of the hour. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. That is my Twitter handle. I'll tweet out links to where you can find out more about Gemma, but most of you know who Gemma O'Doherty is. Let's welcome her to the programme then, a brilliant journalist. I meant what I said a few minutes ago. The juxtaposition between the ineptitude of Sky News presenters and Channel 4 presenters failing to ask simple questions when confronted by ministers and secretaries of state. For many years now, Gemma O'Doherty's been asking serious questions of ministers and governments and prime ministers, Taoiseachs, of course, I should say, and the police and the clergy in our country. Many of our listeners know all about her and have been reading her for many, many years. She was on this programme a couple of years ago, was Gemma, speaking about the mystery of the disappearance of Mary Boyle. She's done amazing work there, has Gemma. And recently, of course, she's known because she tried to secure a nomination to run for the presidency, the Irish presidency. And she might have come up a little bit short, but she did very, very well. And I think that's been a fairly eye-opening experience for her. Let's welcome to the programme. Great journalist there. We're running out of them. It's Gemma O'Doherty. Gemma, welcome back to the programme. How are you?
Hello, Richie. How are you? Thanks very much for all of that. I'm not sure how true it all is.
I know our tongues can run away with this, but I meant every bit of it. I'm not sycophantic. I meant every bit of that. The work you've done over the years, it's courageous stuff, and we don't see so much of it anymore. Tell us about that experience then of trying to run for the presidency and why. What motivated you to do it?
Well, I suppose I had reached a point where I am so profoundly concerned about corruption in Ireland. I believe it is the beginning and end of all of our problems in Ireland at the moment. We have a corrupt media. We have corruption within government. The political system is corrupt to the core. We have a health system that is corrupt. Taxpayers' money is being squandered at a terrifying rate. And there is no accountability or transparency in Ireland. And this is extremely damaging for democracy. People are so cynical. They are worn down by scandal after scandal. And they feel they're living in a very repressive society. And they feel very disillusioned, I think. And there's an awful lot of very frightening things happening to people. So I made that decision that I was going to seek public office. It was a terrifying decision for me because I'm a journalist to the core. I never had any interest in getting involved in politics, but I said, well, if I don't do this, you know, I can't ever say to myself, well, you didn't try and affect real change. But I really didn't get very far, Richie, at all.
You've done all right now. You had a lot of support. Let's be honest about that. You had a lot of support from people like me, from ordinary folk. And that was borne out through the interest across social media. Of course, you had no level playing field when it came to the Irish media. That wouldn't be a surprise at all. But you are modest, but you did well. I think you did very well. Was there one straw that broke the camel's back moment? Because I know you're right across several really important issues. Was there one thing that led you to go, right, that's it, I'm throwing my hat in the ring, as it were?
I think it was the moment I read an interview with Gavin Duffy, whereby he refused to answer questions about his connection with Dennis O'Brien. Now, just so your listeners know, Gavin Duffy is one of the candidates who has been nominated to run for president. And he's one of three former Dragon's Den stars who have got through to the final ballot. Which in itself speaks volumes really about the calibre of person that is going forward. Not that there's anything wrong with those individuals, I'm sure, but it's really become more like a celebrity contest than anything else. And I believe that's demeaning to the role of head of state. So when I saw that he was not willing to answer questions fully about his relationship with Dennis O'Brien, who in my opinion, is probably has the most toxic influence over our democracy in Ireland. That was the final straw for me. But there have been many final straws. you know, I've worked on a lot of cases of Garda police corruption in Ireland, cases of murders that have been covered up by the Gardaí, by the state, including those you mentioned, Mary Boyle, who's actually British born, our youngest and longest missing child, a dreadful cover up. I've been writing a lot about paedophilia that has been covered up by the establishment here, not just the Catholic Church, but the political elite, and in one very exclusive Dublin school in particular. And it's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying what is being covered up here. And, you know, I'm in a position to do it. And I felt there's so many vulnerable people who can't put their heads above the parapet. And I felt I had a duty to do it.
And it takes enormous courage, and I know it does, because having grown up in the radio in Ireland, I've met one or two, again, there aren't many, but I've met one or two journalists with the integrity that you've shown over the years. And I know it's not easy, because you make a lot of sacrifices when you take on the apparatuses of the state and the institutions of the state. And it's not been easy for you over the years, but you never stop. And I want to... This is your time up to 6 o'clock. So wherever you want to go, I'm happy to go. But you talked there, and you did speak to me today about uncovering and writing about paedophilia in a private school in Ireland. Now, this is very interesting, because I've recently been speaking to people who are abused at very famous private schools here in the UK. What's happening in Ireland? Which school is it, and what's been going on?
Yeah, well, this is a school. It's called Terenure College. It's in an affluent suburb of South Dublin. And I suppose it is the first time really that we have seen the widespread. It was basically systemic, violent, sexual and physical abuse being perpetrated upon many, many students in this school over decades. I'm not talking about, you know, whether it's happening currently, but it was really the first time that we saw this happening in a private school in Ireland to the degree that it was in Terenure College. Up to now, it's been more sort of the state institutions, Christian Brothers, where we knew that there was, you know, an awful lot of child sexual abuse going on. So this, as I say, it's a very exclusive rugby school. And I first wrote about it in December of 2017, mainly about a number of Carmelite priests who had been accused of abusing very young boys there in, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s. And then it came to my attention that a high profile rugby coach who taught at the school, a man called John McLean, was the subject of multiple allegations of child sexual abuse. Now, John McLean is the man who is, he's said to have discovered Brian O'Driscoll's talents, a very, very, you know, reputable rugby coach, certainly in sporting circles, and there's no suggestion that he abused Brian O'Driscoll. But unfortunately, this other side has emerged. And many, many of the men that I have spoken to who say they were abused by him are still waiting for him to face justice. And some of those went to the police many years ago and nothing was done. Now, as a result of our investigation, a file has finally gone to the DPP, the equivalent of the CPS over there. But that file is now gathering dust. And it's taking a long time for this man to face justice. And all of the while, his alleged victims are suffering. They can't get on with their lives. And I suppose for me, this case has really opened my eyes to, I suppose, the culture of narcissism that exists within Irish society. Because many of these men who were abused when they were boys went on, some of them went on to become pillars of society within banking and within the law and within medicine in Ireland. And many of them failed to get treatment for what happened to them. as children, because, you know, we have dealt so poorly with the legacy of sexual abuse in Ireland. We don't know what it does to people, Richie.
No.
And this is what I have learned. I've learned so much because I've interviewed so many of these past pupils who are middle class professionals who tell me their lives were ruined, their marriages broke up. They could never understand what it was, why, as a result of what happened to them when they were little boys, they could not get on with their lives. And many of them, unfortunately, have gone on to become abusers themselves.
And they admitted this, didn't they? Some of these men admitted this in candid conversations with yourself and with others. They openly admit this, right? That they've had problems with, paedophilia themselves, wanting to abuse children.
Well, I mean, I can't say that they have said that to me, but what they have said is that they are not able to hold down relationships. They're emotional wrecks. They don't trust anyone. They don't trust authority. And when they do get into relationships, they can emotionally abuse the other person. And we see this in narcissistic abuse, which is a modern phenomenon, which is getting out of control. If I had my way, and it was one of the things I wanted to explore if I had become president, I would like to educate young people in a second level school about narcissistic abuse, which is often perpetrated by victims of child sexual abuse, who, as I say, did not get counseling, did not get treatment. And a lot of professionals in this area, Richie, would say it's not treatable. It's a personality disorder. It is not treatable. These people cannot be cured. And what happens is with narcissists, it comes from the Greek Narcissus, who developed a love of himself and he created a false ego. And many of these people who were sexually abused as children, who were not treated properly for that, create a false ego. They are not able to, they've no empathy. They have no compassion because they were destroyed as children. And they go on to cause an awful lot of wreckage in other people's lives. They can't form stable relationships. They are often very sort of insecure. They can be very conceited people. And they cause a hell of a lot of damage. And we have to face up to that. We've seen throughout history how the abused go on to abuse. We've seen it, dare I say, with what is happening in Palestine at the moment. We've seen it in Ireland. We've seen it in the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
The abused often go on to abuse. And we have to stop playing the victimhood, because until we break that sort of link in the chain, we need to break that and say, okay, yes, people are victims of child sexual abuse. Are they going on to destroy the next generation? I would say often they are.
And it doesn't have to be sexual abuse they're perpetrating on other people. You see, you're touching on something here. This is critical thinking, really, you're getting into here now. Because if you're talking about establishment people, you're talking about people who the abuse that they might inflict might be on a wide body of people, like the public at large, for example, you know, in terms of the decision making that goes into maybe running a government or running a local authority. Profound,
exactly.
I don't know, sociopathic decisions that destroy people's lives. We see it over here with universal credit and the bedroom tax. And you say to yourself, how can they have no empathy for the people whose lives they're destroying? But that brings me to this question I want to ask you. This is a question. You can just dismiss this out of hand if you want, Gemma. Why do you think, though, it's very speculative, this, why do we see so much of this in establishment institutions, the private schools, the boarding schools? Why do you think that is?
Why do we see so much of
the sexual abuse in establishment institutions, even to this day, whether it be boarding schools, you know, private schools? It seems to be almost rampant in these institutions.
Yeah, I mean, it's terrifying. It's obviously nothing to do with sex. It's all to do with power. And I think it's been more suppressed in middle class institutions because of the shame that is attached to it. And I know, for having covered the Tear in Your College scandal, you know, a lot of those boys went home to their parents and told their parents, you know, I was abused today in school, or with whatever, somebody molested me today in school. And their parents did not want to know. And this was less likely to happen, I think, in lower socioeconomic classes, where people have spoken out more about the impact of sexual abuse and the prevalence of it. But certainly within the higher echelons of society, it has been suppressed. And I just want to get back to one point you made there. I know of an individual who was abused as a young boy in, I won't say where, and he went on to become very senior in one of the a major financial institution, which has been very involved in evicting people from their homes. Now, I know people are listening to me and probably saying, now, where is she going with this? But this is what I am talking about, narcissistic abuse. These people who are today throwing people out of their homes for no reason whatsoever, creating a housing crisis that does not need to exist because we have so many vacant homes in Ireland. I think over 200,000 possibly at the last count. And we look at the individuals who are perpetrating this. And some of them, I know, were sexually abused as children. And they are cold.
Yeah.
They are, I call them the stones.
Heartless,
They are stones. I have been in government buildings, the Dáil, the Seanad, an awful lot in the last few years. And I have been telling people, telling public representatives stories of awful sexual abuse, stories of murder that have been covered up. And sometimes when I'm talking to them, I feel I would get a better reaction out of that wall. And you and again, like I call them the stones. You can't get through to these people. It's the same with senior members of the Gardaí. You know, you tell them what has happened and they don't want to know. The shutters are down. There is no compassion in Ireland within the institutions of the state anymore. There's no humanity. Does it go back to the legacy of child abuse in Ireland? Some of it definitely does.
And 800, 900 years, 1,000 years of occupation as well. That's you and I could do. I'd like to get you on in a couple of weeks' time for a full show, Gemma. We'll have a right good bash at these subjects. They're very interesting subjects. Gemma O'Doherty is our guest today, folks. Thanks for telling us that about Terran Ure. I hope that you'll get answers real soon from the Director of Public Prosecutions in Ireland and the police as to why it's gathering dust in that file on that man, especially with all that evidence. Great to have Gemma on the programme. Undoubtedly, once we announced that Gemma was coming on, a lot of people got in touch with us to say that they wanted to send a personal thanks to her for speaking out for the families of girls who feel very strongly that they've had a very negative reaction after being given the HPV Gardasil vaccine. And this is something that came to this program a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, and we've been talking about it often and ever since. Now, you announced only a short time ago on Twitter that you were coming on the program. Thank you very much for that, by the way, bringing us a few extra listeners. Love that. But you've triggered a few. Already there are people, somebody called Kim Vaccines Work and somebody called Owen Hanley, and they are saying that you are politicising the name of Emma Vic Vahuna, whom I know you want to talk about. I don't believe you're politicising her name. I think you're right to talk about her and to talk about HPV. Were you prepared yourself, despite all the crap you've had to put up with over the years when you've gone after big stories, the sort of nonsense that kind of vomits forth when you dare to ask questions about this particular vaccine. Have even you been surprised by the reaction you've had, Gemma?
Yeah, I have, and it'll embolden me. So to any of the trolls out there listening, bring it on, because the more they target me on this, the stronger it makes me. So it's just not working. Yeah. I will stand up for these children and their parents if it is the last thing I do. This HPV vaccine will, and I can be quoted on this ad nauseum now, I'm going to say it, will turn out to be the biggest health scandal of our times. I am absolutely convinced of that. If you had asked me that 4 weeks ago, I would have said, what are you talking about? But something very strange happened to me when I was involved in the presidential campaign, which my manifesto was about corruption, corruption, corruption. That's all I wanted to talk about. For some reason, every time I did an interview with the mainstream media, they were bringing up the HPV vaccine. Wow. I'm thinking, I want to talk about corruption.
Yeah.
No, we want to talk about HPV. There was one interview I did with the Sunday Business Post, Hugh O'Connell, the reporter, who harangued me during the interview to say, if I was president, would I support the HPV vaccine? I'm looking at him thinking, are you going crazy? What are you talking about? And I said, well, as a journalist, it's always been my job to say, is something safe rather than something is safe? I said, Hugh, you can say it is safe, but I will always say, is it safe? Because by asking, is it safe, you make something safer. All of these pharmaceutical companies, food companies, all of them have to be regularly held to account by the media to make sure that everything is safe. Because when an institution is not held to account, where there is no oversight, well, then that's when problems happen and we get food scandals and food scares, etc. So during the campaign, I became very, very concerned that due to the hysteria in the mainstream media about this vaccine, that there was something wrong with it. So when it was over, I made a promise to myself that I am going to investigate this, because every female child in this country is getting that vaccine now. I suspect many of them now won't, due to new evidence that has come into the public domain, but they're also trying to give it to boys now as well through the school system.
Which is insane. That in itself is insane, right?
It's insane. I mean, look, okay, cervical cancer is a very rare cancer. As admitted by one of the poor women, Vicky Phelan, who was, unfortunately, as a result of poor screening, her cancer has been allowed to develop. But this cancer is entirely preventable. Vicky Phelan has said that herself recently. And it is entirely preventable through good screening. So why it is we are risking the health of our children by giving them a vaccine, which it now emerges is not safe. Its safety trials are profoundly flawed. And this has emerged in a number of articles recently. Why we are risking the health of our children on the false claim that we are curing this very, very rare preventable cancer. It is ludicrous. There's so many aspects to this vaccine that are terrifying, and they terrify me. We could take a while to go through them, but, you know, Richie, I mean, I don't know if there's anything specific really that you're interested in talking about in relation to the vaccine.
No, it's brilliant work you're doing, because I've gone into it so many times. And of course, I've managed to bring GPs, not alternative health practitioners, because they love to ridicule the alternative health practitioners, which is pathetic and condescending. But I've had GPs on from various countries, you know, reputable GPs who've said that there are so many issues with the testing of this. Merck's own documentation actually says that it is possible to have some of the problems that the girls are having. To me, it's kind of open and shut, Gemma. But, you know, what I've been very interested in is the vitriol and the venom and the hatred directed at the families who've had the courage to speak up by people like David Robert Grimes, I think, whom I've taken to task on this programme. I invited him on, he wouldn't come on. And others who've actually accused them of child abuse. And just before you come back in, Gemma mentioned earlier on, Gemma O'Doherty's our guest, by the way. She mentioned earlier, the trolls can bring it on. Do you know what's really sickening about these people? They've all been invited on, and they've been given the strictest of assurances that I will never get out of order with them, that I will behave as any presenter should behave and let them speak and put the counterpoints to them, but they refuse to come on. They prefer to name call and to abuse on Twitter than actually come onto a public forum and say, well, I'll tell you why the vaccine is safe and I'll tell you why you're a scaremonger, Richie Allen or Gemma O'Doherty. They prefer not to do that. They refuse to come on. That cheeses me off. So I'm in no doubt that the evidence, Gemma, I mean, if you want to talk about a couple of key points, I mean, you know, the obvious points where the irrefutable facts about this vaccine and why you should think very, very hard about whether your daughter gets it or not.
Well, I mean, certainly, I've had to educate myself about it in the last few weeks, and what I have learned has just been absolutely terrifying. I mean, for example, when children are given this vaccine in secondary schools in Ireland, parents cannot make informed consent in relation to the potential adverse side effects because they are not given the patient information leaflet when they are asked to sign the consent form. Now, that patient information leaflet is contained in every packet of Gardasil manufactured by Merck. And it outlines the very potentially serious adverse effects that this drug can inflict on children and is inflicting on many healthy girls who are being described by our health service as emotional terrorists, and their parents are too. These are children who were injured by this drug. There's no doubt about that. Healthy, perfectly healthy girls who were given this vaccine suddenly are getting a whole range of bizarre symptoms, and they have been treated despicably by the health service. Their families cannot get treatment for them. It's unthinkable what is happening to these families and to these girls whose lives, many of them were very healthy, very sporty children, and suddenly they get this vaccine and everything changes. Now, when parents were not aware, some of the parents that I've been dealing with, they were not aware that they were being denied the patient information leaflet by the HSE. But the HSE, the Health Service in Ireland, took it upon themselves not to give parents this information. So therefore, parents cannot give informed consent. Now, I'd say down the road, the Irish taxpayer is going to have to pay out a fortune, and rightly so, although it's always the taxpayer that has to fund
brilliant point,
compensation
Gemma.
Schemes.
Brilliant point. Further down the road, the Irish state's going to have to cough up, if not hundreds of millions, maybe even a couple of billion quid. And that is why people listening to this who might be indifferent to it or who might be predisposed to thinking that all conspiracies are all nonsense, fair enough, you think that if you want, but there's enough evidence out there to at least put a moratorium on this and to at least get an independent inquiry into the efficacy and the safety of it. You hit the nail on the head there, Gemma. It could cost the taxpayer untold amounts of money in the future.
And that's why Simon Harris and the Health Service don't care, because the taxpayer will bail them out every time. If we had prison sentences for ministers who abused public money, and more importantly, who abused people who were victims of incompetence in the health service, if we had prison sentences for those ministers, they might think twice before they carry out these appalling crimes. And they are crimes. The other really important thing that's happened in relation to the HPV vaccine recently has been the release of a new book in America called The HPV Vaccine on Trial, which was written by two renowned lawyers and an Irish researcher, Eileen Iorio. And this book is just damning in what it has uncovered in relation to the vaccine. And the person who wrote the foreword of this book is the former Nobel Prize winner, the virologist who discovered the HIV virus, Luc Montagnier. And he describes the HPV vaccine as a crime against children. Now, this is one of the most renowned scientists in the world. But some of the things that they have uncovered is that HPV vaccines have never been proven to prevent cancer of any kind. They also found that there were no participants in the original HPV trials that received true saline placebos. They have exposed that the trials themselves never explored the possible effects on human fertility or their potential to cause cancer. Now, it has previously been alleged that the safety trials were flawed. And that in itself is a major problem for Merck, who has been brought into disrepute in the past, not least in relation to its production of its arthritis drug Vioxx, which is alleged to have killed, I believe, more than 50,000 people, and which caused cost Merck billions in compensation. And, you know, there's a theory out there that the HPV vaccine is actually an alternative way of saying help pay for Vioxx. That's one of the theories that is there, because Merck lost so much money as a result of compensating families in relation to that drug.
Irish people, Gemma, sorry to interrupt you, the Irish people don't know this. Neither do the people of this country. I've been looking into these companies for years. Their testing methods are sick. They are satanic. They go to the poorest countries in the world and they pay a pittance for poor men and women, young men and women, to trial their crap on. And often then, afterwards, then will, you know, omit certain things, certain findings, certain data that doesn't suit them. And then they will say they got it passed and they will get it through, you know, the FDA in America or over here. They are satanic. The methodology.
Look, I mean, what is really frightening about this is how Merck has embedded itself with certain agencies by giving them donations. And then those agencies go out and tell the whole world that this is the safest vaccine ever to appear on the planet. For example, the Irish Cancer Society has been pushing this vaccine to a point that it is embarrassing. And then you check the coffers of the Irish Cancer Society and you see that they got over $200,000 from Merck. I've been highlighting the fact that a number of very vocal so-called spokespeople, you know, in the media and in medicine in Ireland, who are pushing this vaccine relentlessly, have also been in the pockets of Merck, doing little conferences for them here and there. Now, what is happening in the rest of the world, and you won't hear any of this in the mainstream media in relation to the HPV, is that there are lawsuits all over the place progressing against Merck, including in the United States, in India, Japan, Colombia, Spain, France. We know, for example, that the vaccine is targeted for 11 to 12-year-olds, but only a tiny fraction of the clinical trial subjects was actually in this age range. We don't even know how long the vaccine will work for. And we are giving this to children at an age long before we hope they are sexual.
Imagine that. Yeah.
We don't even know how long that it's going to last. You know, this is high risk. Our children are being used as guinea pigs. And I would say today to any parent of any child that is due to get this vaccine, hold off. Teach your children, look, you know, this vaccine, it's all hyped up about it. You know, it's the great cancer vaccine. We finally found a vaccine for, you know, to tackle cancer. That is the utopia we all dream of, but it's not the reality. Parents should be saying to their children, you know, just hold back. If you look after yourself and your body, you're not going to get this HPV virus. Protect yourself. You know, don't be going off with every Tom, Dick and Harry when you're older. And I actually think some of this is to do with the early sexualization of children, which is rampant in our society at the moment. And we need to start saying to kids, there is a better way, actually, because look, we've seen it in Ireland. When your sexuality is destroyed as a child, we see the legacy that leaves people when they are adults. The more I look into this drug, the more I really question, what is it all about? Why are we giving this to children at such a young age? pretty much telling them, you're going to be very sexually active with lots of different partners when you're older, and this is the way it's going to be. Well, actually, does it have to be that way? Why does it have to be that way? What are we actually teaching children? But this vaccine, I would tell any parent tonight, stay away from it unless you are absolutely sure. And at the moment, the jury is still very, very much out. No matter what nonsense you hear spouted from the HSE, Simon Harris, the mainstream media, and some, you know, so-called doctors that I would seriously question their own motivations on it. I'd like to talk about Emma Vickmahuna as well.
Yeah, just before you do, let me just do this, because we've got about 9 minutes left on this if I go over six, which I will do because it's important. But I've got to be done by about 5 past the hour. Just before you speak about Emma, in the interest of fairness and balance, Thomas Brunkard has tweeted, listening to the show featuring Gemma plugging a book by two lawyers. The old tropes are coming back. Saline placebos, protocol 18, he says. Gemma theorises that Gardasil is a way of spinning money to pay for Vioxx. Mad stuff, he says. And then he says, Mr. Allen uses the adjective satanic. Thomas, don't be dishonest. I used the adjective satanic to describe the practices of Merck, going to third world countries to test medication on the poorest people on the planet who can't do anything about it when the medication kills them. It's a fair comment, right? But anyway, the old tropes are coming back. Mad stuff.
Look, I say to that man, if he had a child at home tonight who got that vaccine, was perfectly healthy and is now lying on the sofa getting seizures every few minutes, who's now in a wheelchair, whose life has been destroyed, what teenager would make that up? What teenager in the full of her health would suddenly just collapse into a heap?
No.
This is happening. You only have to look at the World Health Organization database on the injuries caused by this vaccine. There's 80,000 plus. It is frightening. These children must be heard and we must look after them if we are a civilized society. So I'd say to him, isn't he a lucky man that he does not walk in the shoes of these parents and these children?
Brilliant comment, Gemma. Listen, spend a couple of million now on an inquiry. All right, if you've got to pay barristers and if you've got to pay certain doctors, certain experts, it might cost you 10 million euro to run an inquiry, but an independent one, go ahead and spend 10 million rather than spend 20 billion in 10 or 15 years' time on compensation payouts. 20 billion might be an exaggeration. Gemma, we're 3 minutes to the top of the hour. We can go till about 5 past. I know you wanted to talk about Emma, and because it was mentioned earlier on again by one of your, let's be kind and let's say opponents, who said that you were politicising Emma and her name and what happened to her. And go on, answer that then.
Well, look, I mean, these people are terrified now. I mean, what is happening is there's a wave of fear that the truth is being revealed about the dangers of the HPV vaccine and that it's not necessary and that it's an outrageous waste of public money. So, you know, the trolls are coming out in full force. I mean, these people are bullies and all bullies are cowards. They're terrified that the truth is coming out. Emma Vickmahuna was a woman who was not going to be silenced. Poor Emma lost her life yesterday at the age of 37. And today her 5 little children are facing life without their mother due to the corruption within our health service, who provided a very shoddy screening service for the women of Ireland. These are the facts. But Emma, throughout her illness, minding her beautiful little children, saying goodbye to them in the way that she did, was also becoming a very dangerous, powerful voice, because she was not willing to be bought or silenced. And in the final weeks of her life, Emma was becoming concerned that she was being used as a salesperson for the HPV vaccine. And she put up a number of posts in relation to this, in which she said, the HSE have asked me to do an ad after the audit and keep pushing me to say that if I had the vaccine, I wouldn't be in this position. If you don't mind, Fine Gael, I am very sick, and keep your nasty agenda always. How you do, you know, just yeah. keep your nasty agenda as well. Now, she says, I am not an advertisement for the HPV vaccine. And if they don't stop, I begin to think they want me to die. And if that happens, no one get the vaccine. She described, you know, she said she described Simon Harris using a word that I think most, I won't repeat it, but it's a word that most of us feel about him at the moment. And she says she's looking at a picture of him promoting the vaccine. He's such an insensitive bee. Emma said it as it is. Emma spoke the truth. She was a liability. She was a danger, because we don't see a lot of that in Ireland now. We don't see people putting their heads above the parapet because they see what happens when they do. But Emma, even though she was dying, facing into the terrifying prospect of saying goodbye to her five beautiful children, she was still fearless in speaking the truth. Fearless. And she said something else other than cervical cancer and the vaccines. What about all of the young girls whose lives have been destroyed by the vaccine? Now, Emma cared about those girls, and her legacy is one that should be to them. It should speak to those girls, and it will, because I intend to continue that legacy that she started. She could see through the false narrative that is being spun about this vaccine. And I spoke to her a couple of times. She was a brave, brave lady. And though she may be physically gone from this world, her spirit will continue. And nobody will silence me in relation to that. They can call it political for all they want. These people are cowards. They're bullies. There is no place for them in Irish society. They are yesterday's people, and they should hang their heads in shame.
It's redundant to suggest that you've attempted to politicise it, because Emma's own words couldn't have been any stronger. You know, in her own way, she was attempting to get it on the political agenda and to get people to take it seriously and to look at it. So I didn't understand that earlier on. I thought that was a bit pathetic.
They, you know, at this stage, Richie, they're running out of excuses, these trolls. I don't even know what that means, attempting to politicise it. I am not a politician. I don't have any political allegiances. In fact, I have said recently that there isn't one political party in Ireland that is up to the job. They've all disgraced themselves recently. So what that means, but these people are not normal, rational, thinking human beings. They're not allowed to think.
Or empathetic.
They abuse. All they can do is shout abuse at you, call you names. They are cavemen.
Listen, do me a favour, folks. Follow Gemma on Twitter if you haven't before. It's at Gemma O-D. Gemma O-D, the letters O-D, one, if you haven't before. I've tweeted out links to some of the information that Gemma's been talking about today. I will tweet out links later. And I'll put something on the website tomorrow as well. Great work, Gemma. I make no, you know, secret of it. I don't pretend. I don't try to hide behind the claim of objectivity. I think what you're doing is brilliant. And I would like to have you back on again in a very, very near future to take up some of those other things we talked about briefly today, and when we spoke off air today as well. I'd be really grateful to have you back on. Brilliant stuff.
Thanks so much, Richie. Thanks for giving me the time. And, you know, you keep up the great work, because it's not easy. But I think the mainstream media now know that the game is up, and people are switching over to programmes like yours where they do get the actual facts.
Well, they are, because we're giving a platform to people whom they won't interview. And, you know, and we're inviting the other side of it to come on as well. I mean, one of the things they do, Gemma, just before you go, is, and it's pathetic, when they do reply to you, they come back and say, well, I'm not coming on because you're some ridiculous conspiracy theorist, and because you used to be friends with this person or whatever. It's just ridiculous. It's redundant. And you say to them, listen, forget about all that. I'm going to be a nice guy. I'm going to moderate properly. I won't get in the way, and we'll give you a bit of time. Let's hear from everybody. And I think it's very telling that they absolutely refuse to come on and be adult and be mature and not shout and scream and say why it is they feel the way they feel. I think it's very telling, but anyway.
They are the conspiracy theorists. I mean, I think it was Goebbels who said, accuse the other side of that which you are guilty. And that says it all about these people. They are the conspiracy theorists. They are the ones who cannot argue rationally with logic and strong arguments because they have no argument. So they just turn to abuse. They abuse, call you names. And they think that in a modern civilized society, that's going to work for them. It isn't.
Not anymore. More power to you. Eileen has been listening, by the way. Eileen Yorio, who was heavily involved in that book. I'm hoping to connect with Eileen real soon as well. Gemma, great. More power to you. Keep it up. And you're welcome back anytime, you know that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Richie. Take care.
You too. Gemma O'Doherty, live on the line from Dublin today. This is the Richie Allen Show, live in Manchester on Fab Radio 2. Tune in radio. Get the Tune In app or the Cogent radio app if you don't have one or both of those. She made a salient point there, Gemma. The landscape is changing. It really is, you know. I don't pretend to know anything about medicine. I don't pretend to know anything about vaccines. I don't. What do I know about it? You know, not my brief, not anything I ever had anything to do with. But as somebody who's worked in commercial radio, who's worked in academia, I know when something is wrong. This vaccine is wrong. There's something wrong with it. There are hundreds, if not a couple of thousand girls in Ireland. They're in Denmark, they're in Spain, they're in the Far East. They're not all liars. Is it not some sort of weird mental event that they're all having? Some sort of shared, crazy, weird empathy where they're all just making it up? It's not happening like that. The vaccine is doing something to these children. Not to every child. Of course, it's not going to do it to every girl who has it. But there's a chance it will happen to your child if she takes it, I think. And I'm no doctor. Throw that out the window if you want. What the hell does he know? By all means, ridicule that. But come on and talk to me. Some of these people that have been tweeting, there's a lady who's been tweeting and she set up a cervical cancer charity in Ireland. What's her name? She's been tweeting on this. Why don't you come on the programme and talk to me and talk to Gemma O'Doherty? How about I bring a doctor on, a GP who thinks this vaccine is dangerous? Why don't you come on and join in? Kim, vaccines work. Come on the show, Kim. Nobody's going to be abusive to you. Nobody's going to be unkind to you. You will be heard. You will not be shouted down. Don't be tweeting away. Come and speak. It's how it used to be back in the day, didn't it? When you disagreed with somebody, you didn't mind facing them. No shame in being wrong. If I'm wrong and this turns out to be nonsense in the future, I'll say I was wrong. You know, I was wrong. No harm in that. Don't be shying away from public debate. Don't be hanging on to nonsense like, oh, I'm not coming on because I know what you believe. Fine, fine. This is not a bully pulpit. I don't ram my opinion down people's throats, not all of the time anyway. And I'm happy for you to have the floor. That's what I'm happy for you to have. But if you come on, I might just bring on one of the mums of one of these girls. How about that? In the interest of, open debate and transparency. Anyway, enough of that nonsense, Richie. I'm going to take a very quick break. When we come back, Piers Corbyn joins me, meteorologist, of course, and scientist. And he's very interested, is Piers, in the news, well, the UK's news landscape today, which has been dominated by the climate change story. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has put out warnings today saying that if we fail to prevent a temperature rise of 3 degrees, if it goes any further than 1.5, we're heading for a catastrophe and it might be irreversible and high seas and all of that. Yes, I do sound like a bit of a sceptic because I am, unsurprisingly. But we'll get Piers on. As usual, Greenpeace and Friends of the Earth and one or two others were invited on. But as usual, some of them didn't reply. And the ones who did reply said they're not coming on with Piers because he's a conspiracy theorist. Well, he's a scientist, is what he is. And his opinion is as valuable as anybody else's. But this is the world we live in. This is the world we live in. Right, quick break. Back with Piers Corbyn in a minute. This is Monday's Richie Allen Show. And it's good to be with you. Lots of tweets came in when Gemma was on. To find out what people were telling me, just put Richie Allen Show into Twitter, where it says search Twitter, Richie Allen Show. All one word. Press enter. And when you do, you'll see what people were tweeting me. The good, the bad, and the trolls.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever. Forever.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Yeah, I've just had a text from an old friend of mine. It's not that I'm dropping names. I don't drop names. I don't think he'll mind being mentioned, but Jim Corr was listening to that with great interest. And I followed Jim tweeting about it. And he's as honest and as fair as the day is long, is Jim. He's been asking questions tirelessly over the last couple of years or maybe more about this subject, kind of gently needling away at Irish authorities to take the claims of these girls seriously. And he's to be commended for that, by the way, because there's nothing in it for Jim Corr, you know, or anybody else. There's nothing in it for Gemma O'Doherty. There's nothing in it for people to be asking these questions. All that's in it is ridicule. All that's in it is mocking and condescension and trolling by people on Twitter. Not everybody. I know there are people who support the vaccine who are not inclined to be abusive. I'm not saying they're all abusive, but some of them are. There's nothing in it. Oh, yeah. There you go. That'll teach me. Turn down that fader there, Richie. I'm on the fly here today. In the break there, I should have been dialing up my next guest, but I didn't do it. So if you've got any questions on that, there are places to find information about it. One is regret.ie, but there are other resources as well. I'm going to put a list of them on the Richie Allen website as soon as I get a chance to do that. Where am I now? Right, okay. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I don't have any choice. I've messed up there. I was doing something else during the break. I'm going to take some music. When we come back, Piers Corbyn will join the programme. You can't have escaped the climate change story here today in the UK particularly. I'm sure it's been making the news all over the UK and Ireland. But here today, blanket coverage of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and their, well, their, should I say fear porn? Should I say fear porn? Scaremongering anyway. Or is it? Piers Corbyn joins the programme. It's your Richie Allen Show. The time is exactly 13 minutes past the hour. Back in two. What I want any old time. I said I'm free to do what I want any old time. I say love me, hold me, love me, hold me, 'cause I'm free to do what I want. Right, music from the Soup Dragons on the Richie Allen Show. 14 and a half minutes. Piers Corbin is standing by. Dan Saff, he's in London as Piers. We'll talk to him in a second. Jim Corr said, by God, she's brilliant, Gemma O'Doherty, the greatest and most fearless investigative journalist Ireland has seen. That's from Jim. Thanks very much for that, Jim. Top man is Jim Corr. Been speaking to Jim. First spoke to Jim in, when I did a radio show in Spain some years ago. Another courageous guy who got it in the neck for just asking a few simple questions. You can't ask questions anymore, you know. Maybe the answers are scary. Maybe that's the reason. Speaking of the sorts of behaviour that we're talking about, there's a guy called Tony Sheridan. I've got to give Tony an honorary mention. Tony works for the University of Limerick, and he's also on a mental health board in Limerick, on a mental health board, on a group, on some sort of health board group, right? And he is the social media officer for the University of Limerick. All right. He's the social media officer for the University of Limerick. Keep that in mind. This morning, Gemma O'Doherty put a tweet out. It was a very benign tweet. Couple of words about, here's some information about possible links between the HPV vaccine and cervical cancer itself. And the social media officer for University of Limerick and a mental health worker said, shut up, you vile scumbag, to Gemma O'Doherty. When I took him to task on that, gently, saying, I wonder what your employers think about you calling people vile scumbags and asking a few questions, he said to me that the university would support his right to freedom of speech. I said to him, I'm not saying that you shouldn't be allowed to say what you want. I'm just surprised that they would stand over it, seeing as you are advertising that you are their social media editor. Anyway, about 25 minutes later, this cretin deleted the tweets and blocked me and everybody else who'd asked him why did he call Gemma O'Doherty a vile scumbag. What are they hiding from, you know? What are they so scared of getting out there? Why are they not just joining the thousand or more families and the campaigners and saying, yes, let's have an inquiry. Why not? It's not going to hurt anybody. My next guest's a great guy. First came on the programme a couple of years ago. He is a meteorologist. He's a scientist, a man of science. And for many years as well, he's been known, well, he's known as he's a former Labour councillor, and he's been a great campaigner on socialist issues and trade union issues for many years. His website, of course, which I'm bringing up now and I'm going to put on Twitter, if you haven't seen it before, is Weather Action. I'll put a link out to it. Let's welcome back to the programme, Piers Corbin. Piers, welcome back. How are you?
Good evening.
Good to have you on.
Fantastic to be here.
Well, thanks for doing it. Now, am I to understand that LBC Radio gave you a call this morning? Was it just LBC? Well, how did that go? What was their approach like bringing you on?
Well, it was a bit short, but basically he wanted me to comment on what some professor they had on was saying. And didn't give me much time, but he did let me say that the whole IPC thing was delusional nonsense, basically a pack of lies. I don't know what followed then, because I didn't listen to the rest of the programme, but hopefully people would have phoned in response, you know, and said... So they agreed with what I said.
Good. Now, Piers is a noted, probably the most well-known sceptic of the theory of man-made climate change, and he's been on this programme talking about it before. Piers was on a famous programme a couple of years ago, The Big Questions with Nikki Campbell, which is pretty badly handled. Listen, you know...
Indeed.
I've invited today again your opponents and said to them, listen, even though I agree with Piers, there's no point in telling lies, I agree with you. I said, come on, I'll keep my big mouth out of it and I'll give you 3-4 minutes and I'll give Piers 3-4 minutes and we'll do it for an hour.
Yeah,
it'll be nice. But of course they say no. So I'm going to just put one or two of their points to you and I'm going to shut up.
I'll do that. I mean, the first thing I said to Nick Ferrari was actually, because it is, you know, I said, oh, we've only got a few years to go for a, you know, tipping point catastrophe. And I said, well, look, they've said this every year for the last 20 years and it's never happened. So how many times can they call the end, you know?
Is that true, Piers? Have we, over the last decade or two, have we had these proclamations in the past?
Oh, yeah. They've always been saying we've got about 5 years to go. In 2000, they gave a bit more time, and they said by 2010, we'll have the end of snow in the United Kingdom and northwestern Europe. The end of snow. Now, we've just had loads more snow since 2010.
It sounds like a very bad joke.
Is extend the so-called deadline. They're now going on to 2030 or 2040. Well, actually, it's going to be extremely cold between 2030 and 2040. So what they'll say about that, I don't know. They might have given up by then, or they might say, oh, cold means warm, or warm means cold, or something's melted somewhere, so that has caused cold here or there, you know. What they put forward is against the laws of thermodynamics.
Why do you think it's going to be very cold in that time period where they are saying it might be irreversible? They said today we'll have boiling climates. Why do you think it's going to cool down in those two decades?
Well, it already is cooling under satellite measurements, and the reason for this cooling, and it's going to continue this way, is that we've got a lot of low solar activity. And historically, in all periods, low solar activity has meant a cold world, because what it's done is it means that the jet stream, that's the boundary between the colder polar regions and the milder further south, that jet stream, which basically goes over the mid-latitudes, is shifted south and become more wavy when you've got low solar activity. And I explained some of the reasons for that at this conference we had in Porto, in Portugal, and also explained them again last night at a meeting we had in Camden and one the day before in Bristol, which were both very well attended and got tremendous impact.
Well,
so
I'm
that
glad.
Is the point. Low solar activity makes a colder world, and there's a million years of history which shows that.
That's the key, Piers, is it?
Half a million years, anyway. Yeah, that is the key.
Solar activity. So let's park solar activity for a minute, and let me just... Because, as usual, on social media, we have detractors, and they're entitled to their opinion. I'm going to read out
of course,
read out their opinions. So listeners are saying, listeners are saying, look, we're talking about thousands. So when you go to this intergovernmental panel on climate change, and when you look at the TV and the radio, you're seeing hundreds, maybe thousands, of men and women from academia. They've all got, they seem to all have the same opinion. This is definitely happening.
Well, they're not from academia. They are place people put there by governments. Most of them know no physics whatsoever, and they're put there by governments to toe the line and get justification for man-made climate change to enable each of their governments to, if they're in third world countries, to receive handouts from the UN, or in the West, to receive justification for increasing taxation on increasing energy prices.
But they won't... Right, OK, I did make the point in my opening salvo today. I did play some audio today, Piers, from an Angela Terry, who Sky News brought on today, and they described her as an environmental scientist. Now, there are a couple of different women and men today across the channels who are described as environmental scientists. Now, I am a real journalist. I might not be a good one, but I'm a real one, and I'm wondering, what the hell does that mean? What does environmental scientists mean?
I think they make it up. It's a media thing. You see, they have this concept of climate scientists or environmental scientists who are meant to be the experts, but they're just media creations as far as I can see. I mean, my view of whether or not you can understand weather and climate deeply is you need to have an understanding of physics. Preferably at degree level, but it doesn't have to be. You've got to have enough sense to understand thermodynamics, that is, heat doesn't flow uphill, basically, and energy can't come from nothing. You know, those two points can reveal straight away that the CO2 theory is poppycock. Other things you need are a bit of understanding of activity of the sun, which may be difficult, but it's not actually that difficult. And if people come on our website, they can learn quite a lot.
And I'm going to tweet out links to the website. So let's talk about the sun. Today, I heard from environmental scientists, mostly. Now, to be fair, I also heard from various climatologists whom we were told we were given clues as to who they were. They said, well, here's a man from the University of Arizona, here's a woman from the University of Gothenburg, and they work in geology or they work in climatology. And I thought, okay, fair enough, those are academics. Some of them were environmental whatever, which scientists, which I find a bit strange. Now, the ones who were scientists, real scientists like yourself, accredited like yourself, they say they are absolutely 100% certain that the anomalous weather events witnessed around the world in 2018 alone cannot be anything other than a result of the CO2 in our atmosphere, the warming, which has given rise to sea level temperature increases. And this is why we're seeing these extraordinary weather events. And they are certain. And yet you're certain they're wrong, Piers. Why? Yeah.
Oh, I'm completely certain they're wrong. You see, what they say, I just make it up. I mean, the first thing to know is that world temperatures have actually declined using satellite measurements. They have adjusted data, making them increase recently and making the past data sets colder in the past to make it look as if there's rising going on. So there's fraud, which they're including in their belief system. Secondly, there have been extreme events, but these are things which we predicted. I mean, take... recent things going on between the 4th and 8th of this month. We predicted there would be a lot of solar activity and Earth-facing coronal holes, for example, which is what's happened, and there would be associated storms in around the world and formation of tropical cyclones and so forth. And those things have happened. Now, none of these are predicted by anything to do with CO2, and they didn't predict anything at all. All they do is say something has happened is caused by CO2. And frankly, they are liars and they know it.
I've tweeted out a link to where Piers, where he puts all this information. I've got to say, in the interest of complete and utter fairness, you were on this program about a year and 3 months ago or something like that. I can't remember.
That's right, yep.
I think you were back since, but you were on then and you said that your data was telling you that we were going to get some flooding events and we were going to get some kind of cyclone-type events, heavy wind and rain events, and you were right, Piers. I'll never forget it. You were absolutely spot on. You were almost, you know, it was minute details you were given. And I asked you at the time, how are you doing this? And you talked about solar activity. So are a lot of these storms actually caused by flares and that on the sun? And thinking that you're speaking to somebody like me who doesn't have a clue, how does that actually work, that you have a solar flare that could cause an anomalous event here on Earth?
The details we do not fully understand, but... It appears that the solar flares or coronal holes on the sun change what the solar wind is doing, making it faster and more agitated and so forth. And that the solar wind is the rush of particles coming from the sun at about 1,000,000 miles an hour. And this solar wind is magnetically guided, so hits the Earth, makes... the Northern Lights and stuff like that, aurora, and extra geomagnetic activity, and affects the electric currents high above the Earth. And those, the whole system seems to affect it does affect the jet stream. And using these things, we can predict some things about how the jet stream will change. But we don't analyse all the details, we just have an understanding of that. And what we can do is work out when there were similar times in the past of sun-earth magnetic interaction, as there will be in sometime in the future. And then we have to include modulation of the solar wind by the moon's orbit, and that gives us... more places or less places to look in the past, if you like, more selectivity to indicate what happens in the future. So basically, any weather that's happened now is similar in some sense to weather that's happened sometime in the past. And then we've modified it when we know our extra activity periods, which we call red weather periods. And we're on one now between the 4th and 8th of October, give or take a day.
Piers Corbyn is our guest, folks.
What be borne out has come true. And I should hasten to add, the CO2 warmists can predict nothing whatsoever. All their predictions have failed. And I've also challenged them to produce a single scientific paper, one scientific paper which shows, using real data, not computerized nonsense, but real data, that increases of carbon dioxide historically, say in the last 500 or 1,000 years, have caused rises in temperature. I've challenged them to say that. And of course, they've come up with nothing. But anyway, it's on our website.
It's all on weatheraction.com, yeah.
Yeah. They've got till December the 1st to produce a scientific paper. Now, I know they can't do that because the actual data shows that carbon dioxide levels follow temperatures, i.e. they're an effect of temperatures, not a cause.
So tell me this, Piers. When the geologist Ian Plimer states that historically there is evidence that there was actually far more CO2 in the atmosphere than there is now. Number one,
he's right. But number two,
he also said that, famously he told Parliament about 5 years ago, he said, he used a lovely old word, a colloquialism, he used conniptions. He said people get conniptions about a few centimetres of a sea level rise, when in the past we've had sea level rises of 150 metres. Was he right?
Of course, yeah. He's absolutely right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, what we have now is a trivial, minute increase in sea level that's been continuing since the end of the last ice age. And Al Gore says this is dangerous. But I'll repeat, he is a liar. And if he really believed what he said, he'd move his house from beside the sea. But he hasn't moved his house from beside the sea.
Well,
he's
not
here now. Propaganda in order to make money out of carbon trading.
But hang on a second. Well, that's an argument that you can make. He might say, if he was here, and of course he's never going to be here, he might say, well, look, this is not going to get too bad for 30 or 40 years. Hence, the house is still there.
Okay.
But also, hang on, just to be the devil's advocate for a minute here.
In
his absence. He could also say, or I might say, listen, Al Gore, he's a politician, and I'm not going to get into that. He might believe it, Piers, because if he's listening to the scientists who apparently make up the 99%, now I don't want to explode.
That is untrue. Anyway.
I know it's untrue.
He pays
scientists
to tell him what he wants to hear and promote the carbon trading scam, which he makes loads of money out of. He might believe his own propaganda, yes. I mean, quite a lot of politicians do believe their own propaganda.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, I'm not trying to be holier than thou at all here. Mm-hmm. But the fact, I always believe if somebody believes something, however wrong they are, they're not necessarily telling lies because they believe it. Look, I have no time for...
Oh, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, of course.
But
they might be blind to the truth as well, of course. Yeah.
How frustrating is it for you that there are three or four irrefutable facts? One, which you alluded to already, that the satellite data shows that the planet is not warming. I mean, this is irrefutable. How frustrating is it?
It's irrefutable. Yeah. No, they don't. None of them disagree with that. They just avoid talking about it and instead produce so-called surface data, which has been modified, i.e., made to look warmer in the past and colder in the past and warmer in the present.
The BBC put
it's fraud. And you remember Climategate, University of East Anglia, 2009. They were caught red-handed.
Falsifying data. Yeah, fiddling the data.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you make?
Right. And that process has carried on. They've just, just tried to hide it between different organisations around the world, but they all do the same thing.
What did you make? I've been asked the question that you're fed up of being asked when you come on this programme.
And
it's about, but manipulation and stuff like that. I had an academic peer on the programme about 4 weeks ago. And his name, God forgive me, his name escapes me. While I've been chatting to you, I've been trying to find his name because it's embarrassing not to remember it. But it's a Monday. I can be forgiven for that. But I had an academic on who believes, and it's a Monday. And he put together a lot of data about manipulation. But before we get into any of that, and I don't want to spend too much time on it because I've asked you too many times before, what did you make of the BBC, its edict to all of its editorial staff about a month ago, telling them don't worry anymore about getting balance when you're talking about climate change because the science has been settled, even by the BBC? I thought it was breathtakingly arrogant. You know, what did you make of that?
It's breathtakingly evil because, you know, this is the type of thing that Stalin and Hitler did at various stages when they needed to cement their power. And, you know, such things are a prelude to worse witch hunts. I don't know what they have in mind, but it's something which I would say that everyone ought to be worried about, because it is an attack on academic freedom.
Free speech.
And free speech, yes. I mean, yeah, well, that's the prime thing. It's an attack on free speech. And we shouldn't be accepted at all. And people should demand that a fair hearing is given to both sides on this issue, as on all issues.
Two questions being asked, and you can take as much time as you want, because we've got about. I mean, you can go now if you want, but we've got 15 minutes left before we have to go. So I'm delighted to have you. Thrilled to have you back, Piers. It's been too long. Piers Corbyn is live. Piers_Corbyn on Twitter. Follow him now and check out weatheraction.com.
Right.
So two questions you're being asked. One, can and is the bad weather being accelerated by technology, number one? And number two, a great question from Daryl, and he's one of many people asking this on Twitter. Why is this lie, if it is a lie, and I think it is, why is it being perpetuated? What are the payoffs? First of all, the technology to accelerate existing bad weather.
Okay.
What do you think?
All right, I'll do those things, put that one first. Yeah, there is technology, military activity to make bad weather and cause trouble around the world. There's the HAARP project in the USA, which projects microwaves into the ionosphere to reflect them back and hopefully make changes in the atmosphere, or even precipitate earthquakes. That I don't think is very successful, but they do want to carry on doing it, and it is military purpose and it's bad. Secondly, they have various cloud seeding or chemtrail type of activities, which are equally bad. Again, those I think are not as effective as they want them to be, but in my opinion, they should be completely stopped. And there has been some inquiries, a limited one, in the Houses of Parliament on these matters. And those ought to be reinstated and a proper inquiry is done and this meddling with the natural environment stopped.
Really good. There was a treaty signed in there was a treaty signed in the 1970s where countries promised that they wouldn't wage weather warfare. People often felt, why did they sign that back then? Maybe it was because some technology existed. Just to break the mood a little bit, Piers, even though it's very jovial today, the Irish government signed up to that. Now, Piers, we couldn't beat Hartlepool. What the Irish government was doing, promising not to wage weather warfare on the world in 1970, I have no idea, but we signed up to it anyway, 1977.
Well, like all these treaties, they'll sign up to things if they get some benefit or other, you know, and the benefit was probably they had to believe in man-made climate change. But anyway, the other one, about what is the payoff.
What's it really
about,
Jim?
I think this is very important. And if you go to our website, you can see a number of things. And looking down a list of stuff here, the prime payoff is money. The origin of the climate change story was the Club of Rome, who wanted ways of controlling the world and promoting world government, and that they need any sort of scare story to do that, and they were quite explicit and said so. And since then, we have the United Nations occupied by various people that have delusions in what the UN's about. See, for example, in November 2010, Otmar Edenhofer, who's the co-chair of the UN IPCC, that's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change Working Group 3, said in a Swiss newspaper, quote, "One must say clearly that we redistribute de facto the world's wealth by climate policy. One has to free oneself from the illusion that the international climate policy is environmental policy. This has almost nothing to do with environmental policy anymore." He said that in 2010, and they carry on with that belief. Now, their objective is, they claim, some sort of wealth redistribution. Now, some of them might believe that's what they're doing. However, if you look more closely at where all these trillions of carbon theft, taxation and so on goes to, is that it's spent by super corporations on very grandiose projects, such as Elon Musk, a subsidy entrepreneur who gets huge subsidies and backhands to make inefficient but quiet electric cars, and that his pyramid is now collapsing. We have massive spending projected for damming up the Amazon basin, which will destroy the native tribes there, destroy their environment, and actually make quite a lot of methane from the lake's course. But, you know, it is worth billions.
Is there oil there, Piers?
And you'll be paying for it.
Is there oil there?
And then we have things like the
My apologies for interrupting you there, because it was important what you were saying, but damming the Amazon basin, are there natural resources there they want to exploit?
Well, there could well be that too. I don't know, often with these projects and things. But you see, the International Monetary Fund and the big banks and all the civil engineering companies in the world don't care a damn. This is a big project. They'll just welcome it, you see. And the other projects like building massive wind farms all over the place, again, those are big spend things. And wind farms are not what they're made out to be. They're extremely inefficient, produce more CO2 than the equivalent, say, coal-fired power stations. And a study in Harvard University showed that they do increase the temperature of the area they're in by stirring up the air so that at night it's not so cold on the ground. It's just stirred up more, which is very interesting. And this is an independent study in Harvard University. And then we have the things like wood chips, where the Drax power station in northeast England is being converted into burning wood chips. Now, these wood chips are coming from continuous destruction of forests in America and then taken across the sea at great expense and, of course, CO2 production, and then burnt. And because they are higher water content than coal and so on, they don't burn at a high enough temperature, and they produce quite a lot of pollutants which are difficult to remove, and they have an equivalent effect of increasing the number of diesel powered vehicles in the United Kingdom by 25%, and those of course are killing people. Diesel pollution is bad.
Is it really that bad?
The official figures from the other side. Well, yeah, it makes people die younger because these microparticles go straight into the bloodstream, which is why they're so alarmed about them in China.
Do you know, my petrol car was smashed up a few weeks ago by a bad driver. And
well, you?
I know, and I got a diesel instead of it. I'm absolutely gutted now listening to this. But,
You shouldn't be getting a diesel. I mean, diesel is more efficient in terms of energy, but production.
Slower burner,
runs at a higher temperature. But in terms of the actual particle pollutants, petrol is better. Now, there is technology around which can maybe, or potential technology around, remove a higher proportion of particles from diesel. And I think that is being and should be investigated further. But in the meantime, a petrol car is less polluting in particle terms than a diesel.
I should have spoken to you before I went to the dealer. Listen, just before... I should have done. Just before we run out of time, we've got probably 5 or 6 minutes left. A lot of our listeners who've been reading you and following you for years, and some of our mutual friends... like Mr. Windows, who was on the program on Friday with Sandy.
Yeah, yeah.
And others.
Great stuff.
Really good.
And I was
really
down in Bristol with him on Saturday speaking at a meeting about this and other matters like Agenda 21.
Which I was going to ask about. And that's what people are asking about. And people are saying to me on Twitter that they followed this. They followed people like you and Mark and other researchers. And they think that one of the things they're really scared of is that this is very Aldous Huxley, very George Orwell. That in a few years, if this rolls out, this it gives enormous amounts of power to a very tiny, tiny, narrow band of people. Power that might even result in a few years' time, if this goes unchecked, where you might be told on a certain day, listen, your household can only use this amount of electricity, or you're only allowed to heat this room, or you're only allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. It really looks very kind of dystopian, Piers. And people are worried about
that. Well, it does.
Yeah.
I am very worried, yes. I agree with that completely. Extremely dangerous. And all this smart metering, supposedly to save money, is not about saving money. It's about control. And once they've got it in, they can charge you what the hell they want. I mean, you see, people are being corralled into a certain raft of ideology that stops them thinking outside a box, other than be controlled by people in charge who are not, generally speaking, elected. Like the European Union is unelected. And if you're against the European Union, then you're told, oh, you must be against climate change activity then, because, of course, the European Union is very keen on promoting climate change. And then if you argue against an Agenda 21, reduction in property sizes anywhere, then you're again told you're against sustainable development or something, because the CO2 ideology is used to justify that as well. So these things, hang together. And then people like Donald Trump turn up, and he's both against the European Union and against applying theories of man-made climate change. So, of course, they hate him to the end of the earth. But I think if Donald Trump supported the European Union, you'd suddenly find that the Blairites would back him. They just denounce him. I mean, there may be reason to denounce him anyway, but on those particular issues, he's used as a kind of hate object.
Is Jeremy boxing clever with his own party when it comes to the European Union?
Well, personally, I think that the European Union so-called problem is overrated. It's a bit like Y2K. Y2000. Remember, we were told just before the year 2000 that all the computers in the world might crash.
I talked
to various computer engineers, and I never got straight answers out of them, apart from friends of mine who just said, look, just don't worry. And of course, they all just played the game and made money out of unnecessary checks. And if you think about these so-called arguments about borders, I just recall that 20 years ago, it was impossible to travel around London with a bus ticket and get on a tube train. It's impossible to administer such a thing, Mr. Corbyn. Well, now you can go around London with a single piece of cardboard or plastic and go in and out of tube trains, railways and everything. And buses. So all these things are completely possible, and I don't believe the Irish border is a problem at all. I mean, Elephant and Castle Station, for example, is in zones 1 and 2. Well, who cares? Is it a problem? I mean, Northern Ireland can be both in the United Kingdom and adjacent to a country which is in the European Union. I mean, all these stuffs will be surmounted. And we're just told their problems by the Remainers, who want us to keep us kicked around by the super monopoly corporations that dominate the European Union.
I'm going to ask you again, much as I love and admire you and I enjoy your company when you come on the programme, I'm going to put this to you again, but another way.
Okay.
Jeremy, I loved for years what Jeremy had to say about the European Union, about imperialism.
Yeah.
And now, because he doesn't have, I'm sure the membership, in terms of the rank and file members, ordinary men and women like us, would support him. But the party don't support what he would have said in the past on Europe. Has he moderated?
Right.
Has he moderated what he's saying? And has he done a little bit of a flip-flop on his opinions on the European Union to appease his own backbenchers, honestly?
Well, I can't really answer that.
I know you love him. I know you love him. He's your brother.
He's the leader of the party and has to reflect party policy. In terms of politicians in Parliament, he's the only one, or him and probably John McDonnell, the only ones in leading positions who consistently voted against the Maastricht Treaty and against the Lisbon Treaty. So they know what the European Union is really about. Now, him and the party, Labour Party, have attempted to do compromises with the European Union, and I think they've been finding, or have found, that they are increasingly difficult. And you just look at what happened to Greece ask, well, hang on,
so
how
away
is
from
the
them.
Attack on Greece defending workers' rights? I mean, it's not. But, there could be negotiations to make things work, but the people have now decided that we have to get out of the European Union, and I agree with that 100%, and Britain has to go it with the rest of the world rather than being tied up in this appalling bureaucracy.
Piers, it was brilliant to have you back today. Well done with the recent events in Bristol and elsewhere.
Thank you.
And folks should go to weatheraction.com. I'm speaking with a real scientist today.
That's right.
I'm not saying that other scientists on TV today were nuts. I'm not saying that. But Piers Corbyn should be heard. He's a scientist. He's an academic. He's got a proven track record in writing about and talking about the climate. And he's being denied that platform on national media on a day today when they're rolling out all these people to scaremonger. He should have been on Sky and BBC today. And it's an indictment on the plurality of our media that he wasn't invited to do that. Great to have you back, Piers. Thanks for coming on, mate.
Thank you.
Continued success.
All the best.
And bye for now. Piers Corbyn, great guy, live from London this afternoon on the Richie Allen Show. Top man is Piers. Weatheraction.com is the website. If you haven't used it before, check it out. It's very good. All the documentation that Piers referenced today, it's all there. Weatheraction.com. He knows, Piers, because he follows the programme. I've been very hard on Jeremy. He's well aware of that. But he's got thick skin. That's Piers. He doesn't mind. We need to grow thicker skins, don't we? Eh? Some of these pro-vaccine people need to grow some thicker skins. Maybe some of these anti-vaccine people need to grow thicker skins as well. And not just dismiss people out of hand because they have a different point of view. I'm going to endeavour to do more of that in the next few weeks. I'm going to get pro-HPV vaccine people on this programme if it kills me. I really am. I'm not having it that we're just going to allow this world develop where people just say, no, I'm not speaking to you because I disagree with you. I'm not having it. I'm tired of it now. It's the old way. And too many programmes, this programme included, we've not had enough of those debates. God knows I've tried hard enough to get people on the other side. And I've had people on in recent weeks to disagree with me and we've had a bit of fun with it. But it's time that we got people on the programme that fundamentally have different points of view and see the world differently. Whether they like it or not, they're coming on. That's the end of it. If we have to beat the piss out of him to get him on, we'll get him on. Monday's programme, back in a minute after these.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like pictures, movies and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever. Forever.
Welcome back to the program. There's a group called the Northwest Friends of Israel, you know. And when they were running around trying to get events cancelled, speaking events by Gilad Atzmon and David Icke and others, I said to them, come on the programme and have a go. Let's have a chat about all of this. And one of the responses was, no. Do you think I'm stupid enough to go on there so that you can control it and shout at me and turn off my microphone? And I'm like, are you watching Sky News? Who does that? Not going to do that. You can come on and say what you want. I won't interrupt you. As long as you give me a chance to reply. You know, don't come on, call me some names and then hang up. At least give me a chance to say, well, hang on a second. Let me put my point of view. And they just said, no, we're not coming on. You're a hateful bastard. You hate the Jews. No, I don't. Come on and tell me that and let's have a chat about it. And I'll explain what it is that I really believe. Honestly, I really will. And we'll have a chat about it. We'll make some good radio, maybe. Maybe we'll make it a regular thing once a month, eh? And they say, no, 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 no. It's a wonderful excuse, that, to avoid confronting those whom trigger you. Wonderful excuse is to say, oh, no, you're hateful. You're some sort of bigot. Therefore, I couldn't possibly speak to you. You know, I'm genuinely no virtue signaller. I'm not. But I'd be all the more inclined, if I was them, to want to confront me. I wouldn't be able... You'd have to beat me away from the radio station. I'd be like, well, You know, if I was one of these guys and I thought the presenter was hateful and he was biased and he was spiteful towards, you know, Israel or the Jews or whatever, I would say, well, I'm going to tell him. But they don't. They just call you names and run away. Got to grow up, folks. We got to grow up. Got some very interesting stuff coming up this week. Jim Fetzer will join the programme. And I've been in contact with, and I'm mea culpa, I should have done this last week. But it's not that I forgot there was so much going on. But Eileen Yorio has been in touch with me. I'm going to get Eileen on. She was referenced by Gemma O'Doherty in the first hour when we were talking about the HPV vaccine. Eileen is involved in that excellent book, by the way, that was mentioned by Anna Cannon, the lovely Anna Cannon. And Anna was on with Kezia, wasn't she, from Denmark? Yeah, is that right? I hope I didn't get Kezia's name wrong. I think I got it right. Kezia Ling, I think, if my memory serves me. So, right, we'll plenty coming up on the programme over the next week or so. Monday to Thursday, of course, 5 p.m. UK time to 7 p.m. And Sunday View is live every Sunday at 11 a.m. For those of you who came in late, and some listeners did come in late and are pulling your hair out that you missed Gemma O'Doherty, the programme will be online in 20 minutes' time. As soon as I go off air, I'll turn it around very quickly and it'll be on Podomatic.com and iTunes and Spotify really quickly. And it's all free to download it. And I will have it on YouTube by around about 10 p.m. this evening. The whole programme will be on YouTube. Because I'm on my own, I don't have time to separate the interviews out. I'm sorry about that, but I don't have time. It's too time consuming for one guy to do it. So the entire programme, minus the music, which I didn't play much of tonight anyway, will be on YouTube by 10 o'clock. But if you can't wait for that, the MP3 can be downloaded via podcast, and that'll be in about 20 minutes' time from now. All right? Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Massive thanks to Gemma O'Doherty. Thank you, Gemma. Thanks to Piers Corbin. What a lovely guy Piers is. And big shout out to Jim Corr, the lovely, the wonderful Jim Corr, and to my great friend Jean Ann Crowley, who was texting me as well when Gemma was speaking. A lot of Irish people, of course, really committed to supporting the families of the girls who are unwell, desperately unwell in some cases, because of exposure to a bad vaccine. No doubt about that. Going to leave you with Simply Red and say, look after yourselves and one another. I've been Richie Allen. We'll do it again tomorrow, Tuesday at 5 p.m. UK time on your Richie Allen Show. Thanks for listening to it. Until tomorrow. Bye now. Bye bye. And I couldn't find any Corrs, by the way. I've got loads of Jim's music and I couldn't get any at the last minute. We'll play some Corrs on the show tomorrow for Jim. Top man. Anyone who ever wanted you, try to tell you what I feel inside. The only thing I ever wanted was the feeling that you ain't. Explaining the way I'm feeling, for all the jealousy I caused you, states the reason why I'm trying to hide. As for all the things you taught me, it sends my future into clearer demand.